If you love to travel, Capital One has a rewards credit card that's perfect for you. With the Capital One Venture X card, you earn unlimited double miles on everything you buy. Plus, you get premium benefits at a collection of luxury hotels when you book on Capital One Travel. And with Venture X, you get access to over 1,000 airport lounges worldwide. Open up a world of travel possibilities with the Capital One Venture X card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Just imagine what happens when the entire world stops trusting the U.S. dollar. That's what that is. And it really is just based on this sense of trust, and certain governments stop having that feeling. And then we are suddenly not at the top of the game, because let's be clear, we're not at the top of the game when it comes to social or economic indicators globally.
Hey, Nara, you know, there's a lot of news going on right now. There's big news out there. Obviously, the death of Charlie Kirk. People are talking about free speech versus hate speech. People are talking about the administration's focus on the left and whether or not how that's going to show up in real people's lives. There's a lot of that. You can obviously catch a lot of it on cable news and all over the web. But while we're talking about those issues, it feels like there are a lot of things that are also important that are going on in the world, and particularly in the United States. And those things aren't being covered as much. I mean, it's like wall to wall on the stuff we're just talking about. And we're not really seeing what's happening in the economy. We're not seeing what's happening in foreign policy. And I just think it would be kind of interesting for us to go through some of that in the show today so that we can highlight for people what they might be missing while they're checking into the other really important stories. What do you think?
Well, we might be missing the fact that Europe is on the brink of war with Russia this time. President Trump is over in the United Kingdom. He's checking in on tariffs, not really as much checking in on the NATO alliance. He is hanging out with King Charles. Meanwhile, Russia is not only launching drone attacks into Poland, but now also into Romania. And Poland overnight called for NATO to have a defense system to respond. It's really what Russia is doing, is testing whether or not the NATO alliance is still capable of defending Europe. I mentioned this in the context of Trump's visit because, one, Trump has not been a fan of NATO. He always talks about how it's too expensive. Two, Trump also talks about how Ukraine kind of put themselves in this situation. So is the United States' position now, if you get attacked by Russia, it's your own fault? And then three, this entire relationship that we've had with the United Kingdom was really cemented World War One, World War Two, when the United States was a key ally that changed the course of world wars. And that's, you know, that's the question mark here. The big question mark is a Trump administration willing to stand up for other democracies in the world? And the answer is not a resounding yes.
It's not a resounding yes. And, you know, we'll get to later talking a little bit more about the economy and what their ideas are for what to do with companies and what's happening with the Fed and all these other issues. The thing that ties all this together about your point here is one of the reasons the United States became the behemoth it has been on the global landscape is because those original architects back in Bretton Woods, if we want to get back into our econ textbooks, those original architects put together a global system that knew the United States and expected the United States to be the biggest global power of the West and of the democracies, but wanted to limit the ability for America to just willy-nilly take over countries or do whatever it wanted the way so many of the other empires did. So you came up with things like the General Agreement on Tariffs and Trade. You came up with NATO that dealt with trade relations. You came up with NATO, right, where everybody, all the member states had something to say. You came up with United Nations and with all these different international organizations where everybody had a voice and everybody had a vote. And the United States, though it was the biggest vote in the room, didn't always have to use all of its power. So right now, what we're seeing in Europe, as you've been talking about, is do people still trust the United States to be a part of that global system? Do people who are in Europe who are seeing these incursions from Russian drones and trying to have the meetings, the Article 4 meetings to figure out what to do, are they really dependent or feel confident that the United States will be there for them if these things get even more hairy?
Oh, well, the answer is no, right? Many European leaders have said this and said that this is clearly in a second Trump administration. They are not going to be waiting for the United States to lead on foreign policy. And frankly, you know, that's part of the America First doctrine. We got what we asked for when it came to pulling back from Europe and from global development. But part of what I don't think many voters asked for is the increase in prices, the increase in global pandemic and health risks, and then also what's going to be an increase in security challenges because the United States is part of a globalized economy, a globalized world. There's ways to balance off American job protections and labor protections with opportunities, but so much of that came from our ability to lead and influence others. And if the United States is declining to give its opinion on what it thinks about security issues, others will fill the void. And right now, Russia has very much stepped forward to fill the void, along with China and North Korea. Are they doing their military parades that look way better than the ones we tried to fake over here?
Well, you know, they've been doing them for a long time, right? They know how to do
they practice at this. This is what they do. But then we also have, when it comes to issue sets that the United States has historically had deep interest in, whether it's Israel and Palestine is the classic example, European leaders are doing their own thing at the UN also. And so it really is becoming more of a United States can lead with threats. It's not really getting in the game of leading with any carrots. It's all sticks. And when it's mostly sticks, then people tend to stop playing with you and stop wanting to be your friend. So it is moving towards that United States alone. And when things happen, because they always will, we're not going to get the kind of response that we've been used to from other countries.
You know, I've been thinking about this a lot and about how President Trump and his family, how they operated in the world before they came to the White House, right? They ran their own independent company, right? But didn't have shareholders, and they had, didn't have to do annual reports and that sort of thing for people in the public. And he was a kind of an independent operator on television and did those things. But here's the thing. Now it feels like they are bringing that spirit, that idea that they don't really want to be confined by any of the normal institutions to how the entire United States government will work. It's like the U.S. government is now the Trump Co., right? And so the U.S. Trump Inc. And so the U.S. government is declining to be confined by the international institutions. We're looking at, you know, they're invested in Bitcoin, right? And Bitcoin, the whole idea is to go around the financial institutions. So no international institutions, no financial institutions. We're seeing them challenge the courts in every way. We're seeing them challenge the oversight of the legislature. It's as if they don't really recognize any ability for someone else to have a say or to have any disclosure or any regulatory authority over what it is the chief executive wants to do.
Well, yeah, that's an entire idea of when you start to run government like a family business, then you're trying to do that without any transparency and checks and balances. And many people are okay with that as long as they feel that they're the ones benefiting from it. And the, you know, the okey-doke here is that the billionaire class will certainly benefit from it. Oligarchs, there'll be more oligarchs created in the United States. Working class people will not benefit from the lack of regulation on everything from environmental reporting. The entire reason we have environmental reporting is in the Richard Nixon created the EPA because literally lakes were on fire and cancer rates were increasing in communities because of companies dumping, you know, stuff into it, places like the Cuyahoga River. And these are all things that we have not had to really worry about since that era of EPA regulation. So now corporations don't have to report anything about how they're impacting climate change at all. Let's just take that away. And more of that is coming where that lack of information, that lack of transparency on what businesses are doing will hurt our communities in a very real way.
And so now the president has offered an idea that he wants companies to not have to do annual reports, I mean, or quarterly reports. And so what we know in the stock market is people, every 3 months, corporations go out in public, they say what their earnings are, they talk about challenges, they do investor calls, do calls with analysts, where people get to ask the CEO and the chief executive, the C-suite executives, about what's happening inside the company. The president right now is saying he doesn't want companies to actually have to do that every 3 months. Maybe they only do it every 6 months. Again, he comes from a private company where they didn't ever really have to do it. So now he thinks that other companies should have to act with little or no, or I guess lesser information out in the marketplace. Now, you talk about the environment. Some people would say that, in fact, one of the things that's wrong with the way we do business in the United States is we don't actually account for all the costs of corporate activity. And so if the corporation does something that has an environmental impact, we don't really put all that cost onto the company. It goes, some of that goes to the American government. And so the government does the cleanup. The government deals with asthma that kids may have. All those costs go to the government. So maybe that accounting should include more of those environmental costs. But it looks like right now we're heading in the opposite direction where there's less disclosure, less revelation, and less ability for consumers, investors, and everyone else to see what's happening inside these big companies.
Yeah, when you don't have the data and information about what's going on in different sectors of the economy, when you're not transparent about it, then it's not as obvious about what the fixes are that help the general public, right? So the public doesn't have awareness of it and they can't say, well, this is what we want. At the end of the day, it's moving further and further away from a government that is about servicing the broad public and taking care of as many people as possible. That's a very different proposition than what businesses do. Businesses are not trying to reach everybody all the time and take care of them. Businesses are trying to sell something to a very targeted class of people. And that's the danger of having a government that is not about public service and what it can do to people, but spends its time on law enforcement and segmenting out who gets to even qualify for any type of representation or inclusion in American society. And again, all of this is very above board. It's very obvious that this is happening. And I wish I could say that it is, there are more people. I know there's people who disagree with it, but there it should not be a surprise that there are many people, not only in the United States, but around the world, who would rather have an autocratic government or a strong leader who just says, this is how it's going to be. This is how things are going to happen. Deal with it, right? That idea of debate, discussion, and having to trade off things is a more sophisticated argument that takes time. And people aren't taking time at this point to understand exactly what the Trump administration is doing that's going to change the landscape of American society.
So here's the other way that it's showing up right now. This week there's going to be a Federal Reserve meeting, Federal Reserve Board meeting. And obviously we all know Federal Reserve sets the interest rates for the economy. They've got two competing sort of interests. One, to keep the economy going, low inflation. The other one is to keep employment high, right? So high employment and low inflation. But the president has been jawboning, is what they call it, or some people might say haranguing, hectoring the Federal Reserve Board to change the interest rates, to lower those interest rates. But the question is, if you lower the interest rates, which will encourage more economic activity, you could kickstart inflation and get it going back up again. We're starting to see inflation numbers go up. In the last report, they were about 2.9%. The Federal Reserve wants it to be at 2%. It's ticked back up to 2.9. So the Fed is very concerned about whether or not to lower interest rates. So what's the president been doing? The president's been attacking Federal Reserve governors. He tried to go after Jerome Powell. I think he got a lot of pushback about that. Powell said no, the chairman of the Reserve. Now he's been going after a woman named Lisa Cook. Lisa Cook is the first African-American woman to sit on the Federal Reserve Board. They have found, because they've been going through everybody's mortgage documents and federal records, what they think is a crime of her claiming to have two separate properties as her primary property. Lisa Cook has been fighting that in court. She's gotten the courts to say, no, you can't fire me until we get this resolved. So she's still on the Federal Reserve. Now she's also saying that she's got evidence that she has not been claiming this to primary residences. In fact, she submitted a bunch of paperwork to the United States Senate where she got confirmed calling her Atlanta home, which is the second home, her second home, her vacation home. So now there's a real contest here about whether or not the Trump administration is legitimately going after Lisa Cook to try to get her off. Why? Because if they get Lisa Cook off the Federal Reserve, if she resigns or they fire her, then Trump gets to appoint the next Federal Reserve governor. He just appointed a new one a couple weeks ago. If he gets to have two new Federal Reserve governors, he has the majority of the board that has been appointed by him or aligned with him. He can probably force an interest rate reduction onto Governor Federal Reserve Chairman Jerome Powell. That's a lot. But the point here is, if the president of the United States isn't now in charge of the Federal Reserve, people all over the world will begin to ask questions about whether or not you can trust the U.S. monetary system. And for those who are paying attention, the dollar is the number one reserve currency in the world. The United States is where we do clearing for all the international transactions that happen in the world. If they don't trust the American financial system, that is a very big deal for what it means for interest rates, stock market, investments. The entire global economic system is sort of hinged on the U.S. being a dependable place.
Well, there's clearly people who want as adversaries. To weaken the American dollar means that Chinese government has been advocating to peg the global economy and all of these transactions to the yuan, to their currency. And they point to every mistake of what happens here in the United States, essentially saying that the United States is too political. It is not being led by standard economic principles. And the more political it gets, the less you can trust the United States. And what is being told to people domestically is that the Federal Reserve and all these other institutions on the financial side need to be under the control of the president so he can make them work for the American people. And Trump will tell you that increasing interest rates will help all sorts of different aspects of the economy, but that's in the short term, right? He's trying to take interest rates to balance off inflation and rising costs. That is a very temporary fix to his otherwise a very, very long-term problems, right? It's the short-term gain for long-term pain. And that's, again, that stuff takes patience. It takes time. It takes an awareness and understanding of how systems interact with each other. And it's not simply about being partisan and trying to advance your team. You mentioned the point about trust. And we know that on both sides of the aisle and broadly, Americans don't have trust in our political system, in the institutions. They trust individuals. They trust specific people. Just imagine what happens when the entire world stops trusting the U.S. dollar. That's what that is. And it really is just based on this sense of trust, and certain governments stop having that feeling. And then we are suddenly not at the top of the game, because let's be clear, we're not at the top of the game when it comes to social or economic indicators globally. Not even like of all the developed countries, we're the ones with the lowest health outcomes, the lowest education outcomes. Like, that's just straight up data. And now you want to take away the thing that actually helped us compete with all of these other places and operate what? Like, we're the Gilded Age? This is like pre-stock market crash, like Banana Republic. We throw out all these words, but none of those words translate to an America that is powerful for the middle class or for any normal person in society.
They've said that, Mira. They have said that the Department of Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick said that he thought, when asked, when was America great? America was great at the turn of the 20th century. So around the Gilded Age was when he thought America was great. Remember, that was during Jim Crow segregation. That was before women had the right to vote. That was before we liberalized immigration laws. That was before we had a minimum wage. That was before we had a 5-day work week. I mean, all these things that we now all take for granted is when they thought it was bad.
It's also before we had any labor restrictions. It's not even 5-day work week. They could make you work forever for however much they wanted to and pay you whenever they felt like it. Like, there were zero rights for people who identified as labor. And maybe most people don't identify as labor because they think, oh, that's manufactured. No, everybody, really all of us are labor in one way or another. Unless you're owning and you're owning your own paycheck and you're getting money from somebody else, that's labor. You're labor right now. And they just don't want to see that.
I just want to tidy this up because you talked about trust when we first got started. And we talked about trust on the international scene and whether or not the U.S. can show up for NATO and its allies. And now we're saying, well, can the U.S. show up in the economic arena as a trustworthy partner too? So what we're seeing is this erosion of trust. And you know who's sitting waiting as the erosion of trust occurs? China. And China's saying, hey, look at us. You might not like our political system, but it sure is stable. We do 5-year plans. We stick to those 5-year plans. The yuan is a great currency. We'll be your partner. We won't be as onerous as the United States, and we'll be consistent. So power, when it leaves a place, there's no vacuum. Someone else is going to fill that vacuum. And will that new entity have any of the values that we think about democracy and pluralism and, you know, regulation that we all want the world to have?
Well, then let's bring that full circle to the top of where we started about Europe and what Trump is doing there. And yes, that is changing the trust relationship between many countries, and this idea of everyone from South Korea to the United Kingdom is now worried that Trump is suddenly going to say, nope, you can't send stuff here unless we put a tariff. So your goods are not going to be coming here, but Americans are the ones who end up paying the price for it. Jamal, why don't we leave it there? Because I do want to tease ahead that next week, your former boss's book is coming out, Kamala Harris, some of that. I know we can have a long conversation about that, but I'll leave it to you if that's today or next week.
All right. Well, let's talk about it next week. We got a lot to talk about because one thing, look, there's a lot of heavy stuff, but getting back into some of the, you know, gossipy stuff from the 2024 campaign is, I think, maybe in this strange environment, it might be kind of a palate cleanser, right? To start to talk about something going to end the democracy.
Have you read it? Have you read the book yet?
I haven't read it yet. I've read the excerpt that came out a few days ago. I'm expecting to get a copy of that book, though, maybe a little bit early. So maybe if
you're
I
like,
get
hey guys,
some teases,
where's my copy? Get that copy, exactly. And then we need to talk about it.
Okay, let's do it.